Mills Fleet Farm Studios. WTDX Lakeville, WRXP Cambridge, WTVZ Eden Prairie. A Cumulus station. We're live.
Live!
From the Twin Cities with the Bob Sansevier Show. Great guests, interviews, and over 30 years of sports insight.
I'm pretty good at my job.
Here's the host of the show, Bob Sansevier.
Well, the goaltender did, and now he's going to get a chance. Duck out! Score! And give him the Wild a 1-0 lead. Congestion and back and forth. They can still control their destiny as here comes Spontaneous. It's going to cross. Score! Zucker! With 20 seconds remaining in regulation. Copsley the goal, the fourth overtime, here comes side. Hits it wide, rolls it right in front of Dubnyk. Gets it down by Hoser, back to Keith with a shot on Copsley by Dubnyk.
How about that? How about your Wild? They're in. Clinch the playoff spot. You know, we're going to talk about them. We would like to hear from you, 651-989-9105. But first, let's give you an update on those Twins. It's pathetic. Fifth, they're through five. Trail Detroit 7-0. They're 0-for the 25th season when it comes to runs. 14 innings now without a run. They're just going to keep it on. I'll tell you what, one thing about this Twins team, it is a model of consistency. They're consistent in screwing up. Well, Joe Mauer has a hit. And Oswaldo Arcia has a hit. And that's it. Ricky Nolasco chased after three innings, giving up six hits, six earned runs, four walks, couple of Ks. He had 78 pitches in three innings.
Is that not good?
No, that's Cy Young level performance right there. No, that's not too good. And this Stauffer.
Yep.
He's on the mound. He's got guys at first and third, giving up a couple of earned runs himself, four hits. He's gone a 1 1/3 and has 48 pitches. Yeah, just leave him out there. What's the difference?
Playoffs? Let's talk about playoffs.
Let him get his butt kicked. Be done with it. Speaking of butt kicking, how about your Wild? Go back to what they did.
Playoffs?
Now we can do that.
You excited?
Sense.
You excited?
Of course. Can we call Marsh Hallberg so I can rub it in? Because I said we were going to beat Chicago and he didn't think so.
Get him on the horn. Go ahead. Call him. You can rub it in all you want. Devin Dubnyk had 32 saves last night, and the Wild did clinch a playoff spot with their 2-1 victory over the Blackhawks in Chicago. They went out and they set an NHL record for consecutive wins on the road.
Now that's good.
That ain't bad.
Especially since we're going to be playing on the road for the majority of the playoffs.
Most likely the entirety of the playoffs, depending on how far you go.
Could be a 7-8 seed matchup in the Western Conference if we get home ice advantage.
Well, okay, there could be. Yes, you're right. It could be that. Is that what you're counting on?
Yes, and then facing an 8 seed in the Stanley Cup, so we get home ice advantage for that, too.
Yeah.
Do we even want it?
No, you want to be on the road. As a matter of fact, what they should do is say, wherever they go, let's say they wind up going to St. Louis. You know what? We want to play all the games in St. Louis. We don't want to go home. We just want to play them all there.
We got to make that money, though.
I bet St. Louis wouldn't argue, or maybe they would. They're a lot tougher on the road, your Wild, who face Nashville on Thursday and close out the season at St. Louis, and that would be on Saturday. And your club is it's impressive. I mean, they did have the three losses, but you go on the road, even though they've had been successful this year against Chicago, you still closed it out, but you got what you needed to do. You clinched that win, and Winnipeg also won. So Winnipeg is only 2 points behind your Wild, but they're not in yet.
And then the Kings lost to the Oilers of all teams.
And that's not good for them. That pretty much takes them out of the mix for a wild card team, and they're two behind Calgary to catch the third spot in the Pacific Division. I think we've pretty much agreed nobody wanted to have the Kings in the Stanley Cup. And right now, it's still, with a few games left for these teams. Now, Anaheim would probably have just one game left, right? Is that what we figured out the other day?
They play tonight.
And that's it?
And then Saturday. They play tonight against Dallas and Saturday against Arizona.
And what about St. Louis? Well, they must have two games left also.
Yeah, because they lost last night to the Jets, and they have two left as well, yeah.
But St. Louis and Nashville in the... your Wild could have a lot to say about who wins the Central Division, because they play Nashville and St. Louis, and St. Louis has just a one-point lead, 105-104. Is the difference between them, St. Louis, then Nashville in the Central Division, and Chicago's at 102. Well, the Minnesota's not going to, your Wild's not going to catch Chicago, but
Calgary actually plays the Kings tomorrow.
So the Kings need that win, and then they might be able to leapfrog them.
Yeah, I don't know who has the tiebreaker there. I could figure that out pretty quick.
Figure it out, so this way you don't bring it up and leave people hanging. I know who'd know. Our guy out in Southern Cal, who's, you know, right basically across the street, Jack Jablonski, goes to school at USC, and that's real close to the Kings.
Actually, it looks like Calgary has the tiebreaker in that.
Then LA is in some serious trouble then. That would not be a good thing for them. But anyway, you're Wild. That's the key. The Wild are in. They are going to the Stanley Cup playoffs.
How about Jason Zucker last night in his first game back? I was worried when he went down because he was on such a tear.
Yeah.
And then
he picked up.
Oh, he might be gone for 3 months. First game back, notches a goal, puts 5 shots on net. He looked good.
And also, that wasn't just a goal. That was the game-winning goal. So that wasn't too shabby either. And Mikhail, I love doing that because it clears my throat every time I say Mikhail, if I got any phlegm, Mikhail Granlund. He had the first goal. All in the third period. It was 0-0 through the first two. And then your mighty team, the Wild. That was impressive. I got to say that, because I thought it was going to go down right to the final game for them. But they still want to get, or do they? Do you want to be the first wild card depending on who you wind up playing?
Well, see, with so much that can happen, you can't really plan for it. You just have to keep winning and hope for the best.
Where you could plan is if you're in St. Louis for the final game, and if you know that means you could catch St. Louis in the first round, which that is more desirable than Anaheim, right? Or is it?
It is for the most part, because historically we haven't been very good against Anaheim, but up until this year, St. Louis was always...
play anybody who you want. Play it.
They were always roughing us up.
Well, the thing is, too, then, if let's say you were going to play St. Louis, there's really no reason to come home because you'd only have a day or so in between. You just pack for the postseason and get going.
Yeah.
Just brick right up.
I'm ready.
You go see the Clydesdales. Maybe the Cardinals are in town. Catch a game. Have a few brews. Relax. Go down to, I think they have a landing down there, which is a lot of fun. Check out the arch. You're good to go. Are you one of those guys who would kill for playoff tickets? Or do you care?
Well, I would love to go. I don't know if I'd kill.
Well, all right. But you would like to go.
Of course.
Well, we'll have to put the word out. Hey, if you have an extra ticket.
I'm available.
Hellboy's available. Young man, available, as he said. You never know what could develop out of that. I want to talk a little bit about, we will be talking about the Wild. We got a huge lineup for you today. We're going to be talking to Tom Moore from Vike Fans. And actually, Tom, we did this last year. Tom had come on with us, and he interviewed superstar Mike Morris about having played. For some reason, he wants to talk to me about having covered the Vikings. But he has one of the best sites out there, because every former Viking and a lot of current Vikings do interviews with him, and they post the interviews on their website. Also, Gophers, there's 3 titles: assistant head coach, offensive line coach, and offensive coordinator. Matt Limegrover, talking to him. Ann Ligori, we talked to her a few weeks ago. She's at the Masters. We'll get an update from the Masters from her. We'll have Pete Wagner and Al Newman. They do On Deck Radio on Saturdays. We'll be talking to them. Jim Suhan is at Augusta for the Masters. We'll have him. John Tower from St. Thomas, talk to him about some things left over from the Final Four. And what I want to mention, I mentioned that obviously the Masters, today was the day of the par 3. I'm not going to go with a D-bag of the day today, because we're going to go with an anti-D-bag of the day. And it would be Kevin Streelman, who is going to play in the Masters and play in playing in the par 3 today. He did something that, it was a real nice, it was a really nice thing that he did. There's a kid named Ethan Couch. He's now 13. When he was 11, he was having, headaches, and his balance was off, so his mom took him to the doctor, and it turned out he had a an inoperable brain tumor. It's benign, but it was still, they could not do anything with it. And he was asked at the time, well, if you could have a wish list for anything, what would you like to do? So through Make-A-Wish, he said, I'd love to go to the Masters. I just wanted to go see the Masters. His dad had been a country club pro, and since he was a baby, his mom would take him to the course to watch the dad play, and, you know, and he learned how to play some golf. And the great thing about this is, because of, Kevin Streelman, who, I think this is his fourth year he's had his wife has caddied, his dad's caddied, his father-in-law has caddied for him this year for the par three tournament. Now, you know anything about the par three? It's just a fun thing.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's ever won the par three and won the Masters, by the way, so it's a little bit of a kiss of death. However, Streelman calls up this young man, Ethan Couch, who has the inoperable brain tumor, and says, how'd you like to go to the Masters? Well, of course, the kid said yes, and then he said, well, you're going to have to, I want you to come here and caddy for me for the par three. That's a really neat thing to do for a kid. Not just say, hey, you can, come to the Masters and I'll shake your hand. He's going to let him caddy for him. And it's happening now as we speak. Caddying for the par three, tournament, which again is a very fun thing that they do for Masters week. It's just one relaxing thing to do before the tournament starts. And the other thing, tonight, they have their Masters dinner. And that's, who was it when,
Bubba brought in the mac and cheese and everything?
Yeah, he did that, but who was the little, Ian Woosnam, the little Scotsman? He did haggis, which is like, what's that, sheep intestines.
A bunch of stuff crammed into a sheep's stomach.
Yeah, that's when you stop off, at fast food on your way over to the big dinner. You skip that and just you load up on salad. But that's a big deal because all the former winners, go to it, and you cannot be invited to that unless you have won the Masters, which is kind of an exclusive and a neat thing.
So I will never get to go?
Not unless you win the Masters. I mean, you're quite athletic and everything else,
depressing.
Perhaps. Can you shoot 70, 70, 70, 69? If you do, you probably break Tiger's record.
On 9 holes, no problem.
Yeah, I might be able to do that at 9 holes too. But this is a fun week, starting with, well, let me put a little exclusion in that. It's a fun week, unless you're a Twins fan, but it's a fun week with the Final Four, the national championship having been Monday night, and for Minnesotans, that was fun because Tyus Jones was the most outstanding player and won that award, leading Duke over Wisconsin. They're still whining, too, aren't they? They haven't stopped.
Yeah.
Those Sconnies.
They'll do that.
You know what? Here's the thing. I just wanted to, I know we're not going to belabor this about Wisconsin, but Bo Ryan complained and, you know, everybody in Wisconsin complaining about the refereeing and how bad it was that the ball went off of, Justice Winslow's finger and they should have called that and given the ball. You had a 9-point lead in the game in the second half and you blew it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't the officiating. You had a chance.
Wasn't it a 5-point game when that play happened?
I believe so. Then, Tyus hit a three. And that tightened it up. It did change the momentum. But still, you had a 9-point lead. And you blew it. That's what they need to come to grips with. A little reality check. You blew the game. You could have put it away, and you didn't.
Yeah,
your chance was there.
It wasn't like a game-winning shot by Wisconsin was called off. This was just a play
in the game. But they got to cling to something. And you know what? And it's not just because it's Wisconsin. This happens all the time with teams that lose.
You know, they should still be proud of their team. They had a great year.
Sure they should. They knocked they knocked off an undefeated team that everyone thought would win the tournament, and I still wonder if that might have been emotionally draining. But then again, they had a 9-point lead.
Mm-hmm.
And they blew it.
Close it out.
It wasn't because they were emotionally drained that they blew it. They want to say it was the officials. No, you had the lead and you couldn't hold it.
Tell Sam Decker to hit one or two of his 6 or 7 threes, whatever he jacked
you
up.
You took the words somewhat out of my mouth because I was going to say, why don't you go ask Sam Decker where he went in the second half? What happened to him? You know, one of the reasons they were there in the final was the play he had. Maybe he used up all the good he had going for him. But that was, that's the big problem. Bunch of whiny babies. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. And when we return, going to talk to Tom Moore from Vike Fans. You can catch at Vike Fans on Twitter. He does a great job. You'll be hearing from Tom, when the big-time Vikings guy. Hear from him when we return.
On Deck Radio with Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman.
We have a new pitching coach, Neil Allen. How hard is it for a manager to hand that over?
As a manager in the minor leagues, one of the first conversations I've always had with my pitching coach is, hey, these are your guys.
It's a matter of trust, right, Al?
Yes,
you've got to trust your pitching coach, and you've got to give him your philosophy. But it comes down to getting people out.
Tune in On Deck Radio, Saturday mornings at 11. Wall-to-wall baseball talk on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket. The Bob Sansevier Show, only on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
We're joined by Tom Moore from Vikes Fans. VikesFans.com, at Vikes Fans on Twitter. David Helmer, Hellboy, we have someone offering to take him to the game. Chad said he could be his date. Now, Chad, we know. Chad from Blaine.
Mm-hmm.
He's been in here with us, and he, there'll be no hanky-panky because, you know, Chad is, I think he's a married fella, but that was a nice offer. Are you going to take him up on it?
I might have to call him. I have his contact information now.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He's
a real
good guy.
Check out some playoff hockey.
You got to go. Well, he's offering to take you. Why not? We are joined now by Tom Moore from Vikes, or VikeFans.com and at VikeFans on Twitter. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bob. It's great to be here, and thanks for having me on. But I got to ask this question.
Yeah.
You know, I hear this invitation from, you know, Chad to the game. I thought it was coming to me. How come it's not coming my way?
Well, maybe you could have a threesome.
I don't think I want to take it any further.
We'll have to find out from Chad if he wants to do a threesome. We'll find out. Now, Tom, you talked to me. You did an interview with me off the radio, but then you did one with superstar Mike Morris about him, his playing days, and for some reason you wanted to talk to me again. So I'm curious what, and I'm happy to do it, and because I figured it might be fun to do it on the air and let the people listen in, because your questions will probably be a lot better than my answers. But
you never know, because, I mean, you know, I heard you talking in the first segment about, you know, we talked to Morris about football. We talked to a lot of guys about football, but how often do you get a chance to talk to somebody who's covered the team? We get to talk maybe a little bit about word processing today. Now, who wouldn't like that?
That's always an exciting thing. You know, got to watch, you know, hit the keyboard wrong, and that's horrible. You get the wrong word. But, how many former players have you archived with audio interviews?
We've got about 125 so far.
Wow.
and that resulted in us, obviously you were participating in the Brad Johnson NFL alumni.
How did I do, by the way? Because I didn't check after the game. I knew that I had Duke and Duke won, but I never saw where I finished.
So the good news is you finished 23rd, and Brad actually sent his congratulations because you beat the likes of Ben Holson and Mike Morris. And, you know, I got to tell you, Holson especially has to be stewing in his juices, because he kept telling me he'd be happy finishing second to last if he just beat you. And he wasn't even close. He was 66th.
Well, that doesn't shock me. So, but at 23rd, I mean, there's no pride in that. If you don't win it, what good is it?
Well, I understand that.
How did Brad do? What did he finish? He finished pretty good, didn't he?
No, he was below you. He was 26th.
Because he picked Kentucky, didn't he?
He did pick Kentucky. A lot of people did that, and it was the craziest thing, because at one point, you know,
and you had 90. You had almost 100 people in this, right?
We did. We had 99 people. We actually had one guy who picked Notre Dame. He could have gone from last to first. Of course, that didn't quite work out for him.
No. Now, how was everyone ahead of me at Duke on Duke also, or did it work out? They just had better early rounds.
A little bit of both.
Okay.
A little bit of both. There really weren't a whole lot of people in front of you. Your Sunday game day partner for the pregame show, Chuck Foreman, he was the highest ranking former NFL player. So he wasn't that far away from you either.
Oh, so it was like a tie for 23rd. I wasn't the only one.
Oh, yeah. So it wasn't that bad.
It was like somebody finished first, or a bunch of people finished first, and then I was second at 23rd. Or, you know.
As the famous Ricky Bobby said, if you're not first, you're last.
I agree with him. I'm right there with him. So
we'll appreciate this, that, you know, one of the players, you know, part of the fun was the trash talk that the former players were giving each other and some of the fans, and it was all in good nature.
Yep.
One of them said about Mike Morris, it was one of his former offensive line mates, what they said about him was, they said the superstar Mike Morris, he sets low personal standards, then he consistently fails to achieve them.
Was that Stussy? Or was it somebody else?
Think Jeff Christie.
Oh, it was Christie. Does Mike know that? Have you told Mike that?
Oh, yeah, he's aware of it.
Oh, that's funny.
He stopped talking because he was languishing around Todd Stussy, who finished 97th.
Stussy finished two from the bottom?
It was ugly for him. But I got to tell you, though, when you look at it, you know, the basketball is really a fun diversion. But, you know, Bob, you know, this is a Vikings town. You know, it's great to hear about the Wild, and Twins are starting out.
Well, and, you know, it's not great to hear about them.
Yeah, well, it's a painful lull between the first wave of free agency and the draft, and people are starved to talk a little about Vikings and Mike Zimmer's team. If that's okay with you, I want to pick your brain about the Vikings.
Go ahead, let's go.
Well, before we talk about 2015, Bob, I know you've been covering the team for a long time.
84 was the Les Steckel error, E-R-R-O-R, was my first year.
1984. So, you know, there are a number of unique behind-the-scenes stories I'm sure you're aware of. So from your perspective and all those times you've been around the Viking franchise, what's the funniest thing that you witnessed either on the field or in the locker room that maybe the casual fan might have never heard about?
Well, one of the things was, and actually we had Keith Millard on last week, and I forgot to bring this up to him. I did bring up to him, and we had a laugh over it when he was back in the days when that was when they had projectors, you know, film, you know, they actually had real film and they watched it on a movie projector. He's, you know, he's sort of stomping through the parking lot, and I say, hey, Keith, you got a minute? He looked at me and said, get away from me, I'll kill you. And I didn't disagree with Keith. It was early in his tenure, and I got to admit, I got along great with Keith, and I get along great with him now. But we both had a laugh about it because, you know, that. But the thing is, and this involved Keith Millard too, when at practice one day in Mankato, I'm sure you've heard of this story. There was a little bit of a fight between Monty Kiffin, Lane Kiffin, he's certainly been a well-known coach at college and the NFL. But Monty Kiffin is Lane's dad, and Millard were going at it. And during right after the lunch break, there's no Kiffin, there's no Millard. People are wondering where they are. Then up on top of the roof, you see the two of them like hand to hand combat, struggling. Then you don't see them. They back off from the edge of the roof. Then you see a body thrown off the top of the roof, dressed like Monty. So that was pretty funny, actually. That lightened the mood at a dreary training camp in Mankato. But that was kind of fun, where it was, you know, Millard throwing presumably throwing Monty off the roof of Gage Hall, which no longer exists down in Mankato. That was a lot of fun. And
how did Burnsy react to that?
Oh, Burnsy he knew it. The players didn't know about it, but the coaches did. He thought it was funny. Burnsy's also another one. You know, when you hear people like I guess you can go to any group at all or any country, they have like a really weird, crazy dance that they do where they just hop around and, like an Irish, you hear like an Irish jig or there's something, but it was some sort of a hybrid of every type of dance you could imagine. Burnsy is deathly afraid of snakes and spiders. And, this was actually during a practice. Scott Studwell stuck a snake, like a little, looked, it was a rubber garter snake, or looked like one, into Burnsy's jacket. You know, they had the button-up jacket when they were at practice, it was a little windy out. Burnsy reaches in, pulls it out, and he just started dancing. It was hilarious to see him do that. Now, I never did witness this, because this happened back at Midway Stadium, and this is another Jerry Burns incident. Burnsy would, he would pick up coins. And there was apparently a lot of coins on the field at Midway, but there also were a lot of coins that Fred Zambrilletti just threw on there so Burnsy would pick them up. So they got a kick out of watching him, you know. And he showed me the collection of coins. He had them in his drawer.
It's a form of retirement fund for him, I guess.
Well, there is that. That could be, part of it, too. But, you know, in the locker room, a lot of stuff happened in that locker room that the media is not going to see. One thing that I personally found amusing, I was interviewing Chris Cluey. And when I talked to Cluey, he's a punter. Who cares about what he thinks about the X's and O's? So I'm talking to him about him because his band was going to be playing, and I was just talking to him about that. So this guy's there, one of these .com guys. No offense, Tom, because I know you have a .com site, VikeFans.com. We're talking to Tom Moore here. But what he did, the guy's standing there, and when I finish, he goes, now we can talk some football. You really want to talk some football with a punter?
He never struck me as that type of guy anyway. He was too busy talking about video games.
No, he was. Hey, Tom, you know what? If you want to ask the question now or wait till we come back, because we have to take a quick break, and then we'll come back with Tom Moore from VikeFans.com. He's hit me with a few questions about your Minnesota Vikings. Tom, just hold on. We'll be right back.
Later today on Radioactive Sports with the superstar Mike Morris and Ben Holson at 4.
The Wild clinched their third straight playoff berth last night in Chicago. Thank the good Lord for the Dubinator and Jason Zucker. Oh, and there's another Twins game already today, too. We'll talk about all that and more.
We are we're back, and you know what we have to chart? We have to, when it's all said and done, we have to see who loses by more points slash runs. The Timberwolves or the Twins are down 9-0 and through 7. Not a good thing. We are joined by Tom Moore from VikeFans.com, at VikeFans on Twitter. And Tom is doing something with me that he did with superstar Mike Morris last year. He's interviewing me about my recollections of the Vikings. So, Tom, I yapped for so long, I only let you get one question in the last time, in the last segment.
That's okay. I'm going to get a chance to actually turn to the current squad. And, you know, one of the things that we look at, everybody was in a state of euphoria about the development of Teddy Bridgewater last year. But, you know, only about 5 weeks before that, you know, there were significant questions before the end of the season about his accuracy and his deep ball capability. And, Bob, I'm wondering from your perspective, as you look at Bridgewater's progress, do you think he's truly turned the corner to be that franchise quarterback for the next 10 years we've been looking for in Minnesota? And what worries do you have about this sophomore season coming up with him?
Actually, I think he is going to be a franchise quarterback. I think when you look at where he was taken, they moved up to get him with the last pick of the first round. He's the steal of the draft. And I do think there was one, you may remember the game where he had a bad deep pass. But I think other than that, he threw the ball pretty good. And here's what impressed me about it. He came in without Adrian Peterson. You know, if he had Adrian Peterson, his first year would have been a lot easier. These were not great running backs, you know, Asiata and McKinnon. I mean, I think McKinnon could be okay, but he didn't have running backs that were going to take heat off. Teams knew they were, if they stop him, they're going to be in real good shape. The emergence of Charles Johnson was a big deal for him. And I think, though he didn't have a lot of catches, I think Greg Jennings helped in his development. And I'm curious to see if he will be missed as much for what he was able to do off the field as on, and didn't do a lot on the field for Bridgewater, but I do think he helped the other receivers. I'm not sure Mike Wallace would be that type of a mentor for other receivers. I'm sure he won't be, actually, as Greg Jennings was for Charles Johnson and some of the other guys. But if he has Adrian Peterson back, and I have doubts about that, he could really have a special year. And I think as the second year, I don't think we're going to see a sophomore slump.
Yeah, you mentioned Charles Johnson emerging, and of course Mike Wallace is a deep threat. But the guy, you know, everybody talks about
Cordero
Patterson. You know, he dropped down to fifth on the depth chart at the end of last year. Let's be honest, he's probably still there. What can this team possibly do to take advantage of some clear athletic abilities he showed in his rookie season? And how do you see his role playing out in 2015?
You know what, Tom? And again, talking to Tom Moore from VikeFans.com, you cannot crawl inside of someone's head, rummage around, and turn them mentally, have them turn the corner and realize you have to put the work in, and you can't just live off of one rookie season. I mean, there's a world of talent there, but he has to be willing and want to tap into it and work to tap into it. And there was no indication last year of him doing that. And maybe it can change, but I've seen, and, you know, you follow this team, and like I said, I've covered him since 84. I've seen a lot of guys come through. The one that for his sake, I hope he doesn't turn into, on the field, off the field, there were other issues, but on the field, another Buster Rhymes. Because Buster Rhymes had the same kind of talent as Cordero Patterson, you know, great athlete and, you know, terrific, certainly terrific kick returner. And that's really all Buster was able to contribute to this team. And, he reminds me a lot of the way he performed on the field. And again, people who remember Buster's off-field issues, I'm not in any way referencing that. Just on the field, great talent, but didn't live up to it and was gone after a few years in the league. There's a finite number of guys who can make it purely returning kicks.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because, you know, Rhymes did have great, you know, success that first year he was here. And that's what I worry about with Patterson, because he was explosive on kickoff returns his rookie year.
Not last year.
I don't know if he lost a step or he lost interest, but something definitely happened.
Well, you got to tell him, don't start running when you're 9 yards deep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I think was a mistake too, because, okay, he winds up running, you know, 25, almost 30 yards. And he's still at the 20. That doesn't do you any good. Just take the knee. Because you're risking getting hurt and also risking losing the ball.
Absolutely. Well, you know, one of the things you mentioned is, you know, Teddy didn't have the benefit of having a really great running game. He's got kind of some functional backs. But, you know, Adrian Peterson met with the commissioner in New York yesterday about his reinstatement to the league. And based on what you know, is there any chance he isn't reinstated to the NFL on or before April 15th?
No, I'm sure he'll be reinstated. But it doesn't really matter, because what matters is that he can be part of training camp. And I still think, I don't think it's coincidence that the Dallas Cowboys worked with Tony Romo to open up $12 million in cap space. A lot of people I know seem to think, and I think, well, and I'm guessing you do too. You're in Texas, right? That's where you live?
That's right.
This is a ploy by the Jones, not just, and it's not, you know, it's not just Jerry Jones now, it's Steve Jones, his kid, that they're trying to open up the cap room to make a deal with the Vikings. And I think they can get a deal done, but they need to move off of, I mean, I had heard a couple of months ago that they balked at like a second and a four. I wouldn't take less than a first round pick for Adrian Peterson, particularly where the Cowboys would be picking. You know, it's not like they're getting a top 10 pick out of the Cowboys. So I think that they, I do think they're going to get what they want. They just have to keep, you know, the more time goes on, the more desperate Jerry Jones is going to get, because he needs to have Adrian Peterson.
And you know, and you mentioned Peterson. I mean, one of the things he said is he's gone out there and said the media has been unfair to him, specifically the Minnesota media. And I'm curious, how do you respond to that? I mean, when the media all around the nation are really saying the same things that the Minnesota press is, why is Peterson so focused on being shortchanged by the Minnesota folks?
You know what? He needs to grow up, quite frankly, because he, and also stand up and behave more. You know, everybody talk, he's a man. Well, behave like a man. Don't say, well, my wife doesn't like it. She's upset with things that happened. Don't have your agent, Ben Dagra, speak for you and say, we want out, or Adrian wants out. Of course, he wouldn't be saying these things unless Adrian Peterson put him up to it. What does Adrian think? People are stupid that they think that it's that he wants to come back and then his agent and his wife don't. He's getting them to do his speaking for him. Say it yourself if you don't want to be here. It might actually carry a stronger message to the team, even though they know what's happening. And let's go back to the ground zero on this. Why did it start in the first place? Because they took a stick and beat a four-year-old with it. That's what started all of this. And we've talked about it before, and I don't want to, you know, just keep, I don't want to come down harsh on Adrian Peterson, because I've done quite a bit of that, but it's all his own doing, and if he wants out, don't keep having people say it for you. Say it yourself.
Yeah, and it's funny. Obviously, to me, Ben Dagra, his agent, a little bit like kind of that yippy dog all the time. And Bob, I was curious, has your agent ever told the ticket that you're uneasy here in Minnesota? Because you got leverage.
Yeah.
I hear Normandale Community College, they're looking for a weekend sports guy.
As if I can afford an agent. Now, Tom, you're you know, words hurt, Tom. Words hurt. Tom Moore from VikeFans.com and at VikeFans on Twitter.
Listen, I know you got a packed show today, so I wanted to make sure before, you know, we had a chance to close out our conversation, I want to do something with you called Quick Hitters, and it's basically I'm going to give you four or five statements here and get your concise thoughts on each. You ready to go?
Hit it.
All right.
Wait. My phone is ringing from Normandale. Hold on.
There you go.
Go ahead.
All right. Audie Cole is the starting middle linebacker in 2015.
I thought he should have been the starting middle linebacker in 2014.
Okay. Why is he not getting a shot, Bob?
I don't have an answer for that. There's got to be something about what he does in practice that is not impressing the coaches, because all I know is when he's been on the field, he's looked pretty darn good.
Yeah. Good or bad, and why? Brett Favre coming to Minnesota in 2009.
Good.
Okay. True or false?
Oh, you wanted a why. Well, he took him,
yeah, give me
took
a
him
why.
To the NFC Championship game. He made Sidney Rice a lot of money. Sidney must love him.
Well, here's a good one for you. True or false? The Minnesota Vikings will win more than 8 games in 2015.
I'm hesitating there because I thought they would win more this past year. If they keep Adrian Peterson, I would say that would be an absolute. I think that I think Teddy, though, can still lift them over 500. Yeah, I think that could happen.
All right. Is Mike Zimmer the guy to finally lead the Vikings to that elusive NFL championship? And if he is, when does he do it?
Well, what you mean is the elusive championship that puts you into the Super Bowl. I think they're still a little bit away from that. The draft would have to have a big part. They do need to get, I don't think that they're where they need to be with receivers if you're building the team around Teddy. And as a running back, Adrian Peterson, certainly he would help. But they do need to get more out of that defense, and I think they really have to make more moves. You can't bring in a 36 or 37-year-old cornerback and think you're solving your secondary problems. They need a safety, and they still need another starting cornerback. And also, they do need a middle linebacker. I think Audie Cole should get the shot, but Mike Zimmer knows a lot about defenses than either of us. We don't have all the answers, though, when it comes to a player like him.
No doubt. Well, the last two are about actually former Vikings. True or false? Christian Ponder develops into an NFL starting quarterback in Oakland this year.
No, I think he's going to develop into as a good sideline reporter and cover games with his wife.
Okay. And finally, what is the Las Vegas over and under on the number of weeks it takes Percy Harvin to throw an Olympic weight plate at Rex Ryan's head in Buffalo?
Well, that's a good one. I'm going to go with week 4.
There you go. Everybody look for it. Put your money down in Vegas. The odds will be starting any day now.
Tom Moore from VikeFans.com, at VikeFans on Twitter. Tom, that was fun. Thank you for taking part in that and inviting me to do it for you. It was a lot of fun.
We appreciate you taking the time as well.
All right. We appreciate that. We're going to take a quick break, come back with our Wednesday Gopher segment, and we are going to talk with Matt Limegrover, the Gophers offensive coordinator, offensive line coach, assistant head coach, or you can go assistant head coach, offensive line coach, offensive coordinator. There's so many titles, you don't know where to start with it. But we will be back with Matt Limegrover.
From the locker room to your radio, tune in the Wake Up Call from the writers of Cold Omaha every Sunday morning at 8.
Peterson has made fans uneasy with his return because he has been so obnoxiously vocal with how uneasy he is with us. If Peterson had come back and just kept his mouth shut, we wouldn't bat an eyelash. We would welcome him back and cheer for him to score touchdowns.
I mean, for Peterson, this isn't home, and it seems like it never has been.
The Wake Up Call with Cold Omaha on Minnesota's Sports Radio 105 The Ticket. Now back to the Bob Sansevier Show. Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
We're joined by Matt Limegrover, the Gophers' assistant head coach, offensive line coach, and, of course, their offensive coordinator. Matt, thanks.
Oh, anytime, Bob. Glad to be here.
Now, Matt, I got to ask you, when people say, so what do you say, well, I'm the assistant head coach, the offensive line coach, and the offensive coordinator for the Gophers, which one do you go with?
That is a great question. I just kind of let them lead it, and then I go from there, because usually people will have a pretty good idea. I think the assistant head coach one kind of, that's a little bit less known. A lot of people know me as offensive coordinator when a play doesn't go right or when something goes wrong up front as the O-line coach. But you know that it's the assistant head coach title as well. So usually I'm either offensive coordinator or O-line coach.
Well, we like the assistant head coach, too. And by the way, your O-line, Josh Campion, he's come in here with a number of your other players. He's been here with David Cobb, came here with Max Williams, came here with some of the other offensive linemen and receivers last season. Great kid, and you've done a heck of a job with that entire line. You must be very pleased with the players you have on your offensive line.
Well, thank you very much. And I tell you what, I couldn't ask for a better group to coach. The line I always say is I have a 12-year-old daughter, and if I could cryogenically freeze any one of the guys in that room and thaw them out in 10 years and have them date my daughter, I'd have no problem with that. It's just a really good group of kids. They work hard. They enjoy being around each other. They get it as far as being offensive linemen, what it takes to do those types of things. And they come to work every day. And when you have that as a coach, it makes your job a heck of a lot easier as far as what you need to get accomplished. So Josh is a great example of that. You know, he's kind of a unique story with he's a little bit older. We call him Grandpa because he's a couple years older, even the guys in his class, because some things that happened to him before he even got here. But he does a great job. You know, he's going to end up being a four-year starter for us, which doesn't happen very often at the Big Ten level. And he's going to end up starting probably at three different positions for us, which is also somewhat unheard of.
Now, he'll stay at left tackle, or you're going to move him somewhere else?
No, you know what? We've been working all spring with him at right guard, actually.
Oh.
You know, he played his first 2 years, he started at right tackle, and then had to flip him over when Ben Lauer, our redshirt sophomore kid from last year from Wayzata, got a high ankle sprain and never was really able to get back from that. And then he got mono later in the year, so he kind of had a lost year. So Josh jumped over to left tackle and did a great job for us. But the great thing is Ben Lauer's healthy now, and he's really committed to putting last year behind him. He's got a little fire in him right now as far as proving some people that he's back ready to go. And Jonah Persick, who's going to be a redshirt junior next year, who started for us at right tackle, young man from Blue Earth, Minnesota, he's doing a fantastic job. So those tackles are really have stepped it up, which gave us the versatility to move Josh down inside. And the nice thing as an O-line coach is to know that you have a guy like Josh where you can go, hey, in a pinch, I can always move him back out, because he's shown that he can play at a high level at both tackle spots. So I wanted to force feed him guard, because that's where, you know, if he's got a good chance at the next level, you know, his NFL aspirations, it's going to be as an inside guy. So I think that'll
that'll help him with those things, and that'll help us get even a little more physical inside.
Well, I'm sure he'll flourish there. Talking to Matt Limegrover, the assistant head coach, offensive line coach, and offensive coordinator for the Gophers. Now, Matt, obviously you could have said to Jerry Kill, you know, I'm a coordinator, I'm an assistant head coach, get me a line coach. You must love coaching that position too.
You know what? It's all I've ever played or coached. I feel like that's where I was put on this earth to be, is to be an offensive line coach. And I love it. I love the challenge. I love the interaction with the kids. And that's a real passion. And so he was going to have to wrestle that one away from me physically, because I just love that. But I'm also fortunate enough that I've got a great group of guys that I work with, so it allows me as a coordinator to, you know, I'm not an overall, you know, all-knowing, all-seeing kind of an oligarch type of guy, you know, whereas an offensive coordinator, it's all with me. We've got the democratic process going in full force, and we're in that offensive staff room, and, you know, it's not a single guy making decisions. It's a group effort, and we leave that room feeling really good about the things that, you know, that we have game plan-wise or what we're moving forward with.
Now, I mentioned a little bit earlier a couple of guys that you do lose, David. You know, you lose Cobb, and you also lose Max Williams. And I saw your quarterback's coach, Jim Zabrowski, on video the other day talking about inconsistency is what you're battling right now in your spring camp. And he talked about sometimes when things are good, they're real good. When things are bad, they're real bad. Is that normal for spring, or is it something that's a little alarming, or can anything be alarming when you've got months before the season starts?
Well, I tell you what, if I had a dollar for every time in spring you felt like the sky was falling, I might be out of coaching already. Because, you know, what happens in the spring is you always feel like you're a step behind, with regards to, you know, the defense. And, you know, just when you kind of get, one hole in the dike, plugged up, another one kind of springs loose. And there's a lot that goes into it. So we traditionally have not been a gangbusters, hair on fire, lighting it up in the spring, because, you know, we're not too concerned about that. What we're trying to do is figure out what guys can play, trying to get them in spots, getting younger guys a lot of, you know, somewhat meaningful reps going against the defense. So at times there's a lot of, it's not necessarily your first 11 that's out there for a lot of it. You could have kind of a mismatch or a mixed bag of younger guys maybe up front with some older guys or vice versa. So the continuity usually in the spring isn't there, because you want to try and see what guys can do. You want to put them in tough spots. So, you know, and Coach Z's exactly right. We've had things that have gone well, and then kind of when things go wrong, it's all four wheels falling off at the same time. And that's something that I think that going, leaving now, next 4 or 5 months heading into fall camp, it's going to be about consistency. And I think that's the number one thing, starting with Mitch Leidner, quarterback, and working all the way through is just consistency and what they're asked to do on a daily basis and what we need them to do for us to be successful. And we don't need, you know, every play being a highlight reel, because that's when the really bad plays come in, when you try and do too much.
Talking to Matt Limegrover, the assistant head coach, offensive line coach, and offensive coordinator for the Gophers. Now, you mentioned Mitch Leidner. Have you seen things in his game at the spring practices that are telling you, you know what, he has improved here or here or there?
Well, yeah, without a doubt. I think his overall demeanor, you know, it's no secret he's such a competitive kid. And sometimes that gets the best of them. And I think that Coach Z has really been working on that part of the game, because he has the physical tools. But you can literally see sometimes, you know, when things aren't going right, he tenses up, and he's a snowball kid. You know, that snowball starts at the top of the hill small, and if you let it, it just keeps rolling and getting bigger and bigger. He has a tendency sometimes that something doesn't go right, and it isn't even about him or something that he didn't do right, but something doesn't happen, is he kind of then compounds it and says, okay, now because play A didn't go well. I've got to do twice as much on play B to, you know, to get it back. And so Coach Z's been working a bunch this spring with the mental part of it. And then, Adam Weber, who has come on as a graduate assistant, is spending a lot of times with the quarterbacks, just kind of being able to be that guy that pulls him aside at times and says, hey, okay, take a breath now, you know, hey, let's review what happened here, but let's make sure that moving forward, we got a good mind and a clean slate. And I think that's been a nice 1-2 punch, because the last four or five practices, I think that, one of the things we've been most pleased about is really all the quarterbacks' demeanor, both, or at least him and Chris, the top two guys, but just in general, how he's approaching things and how he's not pressing too much and not letting one bad thing turn into three.
Now, Matt, when all this is over for spring, will you go into the fall saying, I know who all 11 starters is, and it's not likely to change barring injury? Or will there be some positions on offense where you're still going to have battles when the fall starts?
Well, I think you have a pretty good idea of a group of guys that you're going to want to depend on. You know, that shows up over time. You know, that's a fairly large sample size. Your older guys, you know what you have in them. But one of the hallmarks of a Jerry Kill team is that there's competition every single day. You know, whether it's on the practice field in the spring, or it's in the weight room, or it's in a workout, you know, the people are constantly having an opportunity to show what they can do and impress the coaches. And I think there are some coaches who preach that, but they go, no, this is going to be my guys. And I think our kids will tell you that it's all about production. It's all about what you do and how you approach things that's going to give you that opportunity to play. So there could be guys that leave in the spring. We say, hey, this guy really has a great chance to contribute for us. And if they don't do what they need to during the summer, someone's going to bypass them. If they don't come in and produce in the fall, someone's going to bypass them. And at the end of the day, Bob, Coach Kill will tell us all the time, I want 11 guys out there that give us the best chance to win a football game. And whoever that happens to be, he doesn't care if it's a fifth-year senior, a true freshman, or a guy who was a five-star or a zero-star, a walk-on or a scholarship kid. It's all about, at the end of the day, winning games. And that's what Coach leads with us all the time when we're evaluating, you know, our talent on our side of the ball.
I tell you, Matt, this is the time just flies by. You're a terrific guest, and I want to thank you. Matt Limegrover, the assistant head coach, offensive line coach, and offensive coordinator for the Gophers. You know what? I'd love to talk to you as the season gets closer and throughout, because you're fun, you're informative, and you make my job easy, because I just have to ask a question, and you take care of it and give me a great answer. So thank you.
Well, I hope that isn't a nice way of saying I talk too much.
No, not at all. it's good substance.
Well, it's always great talking with you, for sure.
All right, thanks so much.
You got it.
All right, take care, Matt. And we're going to take we'll take a quick break, and we'll come back with an update from the Masters in Augusta.
105 The Ticket, available on iHeartRadio.
We are pleased to be joined by Ann Liguori. We talked to her several weeks ago. She's had a distinguished career in broadcasting, has sports interview with Ann Liguori. And we talked to you last time, Ann, we talked about a lot of your classic shows being on Hulu. And I'm sure that's going very well.
Yes, thanks for bringing that up. It's they're on Hulu.com. There are 60 of my 600 sports interview with Ann Liguori shows. You know, these interviews with legends like Mickey Mantle, Ted Williams, Will Chamberlain, Hank Aaron, Jim Brown, Billie Jean King. So I'm just thrilled that they're now on a variety of digital platforms, including Amazon.com now,
wow,
where people can view them and kind of reconnect with some of these top legends in sports.
Now, Ann, you're in Augusta, correct?
I am. I'm in at Augusta National as we speak in the media room, and it's a great place to be.
Now, could you hear the roar when Jack Nicklaus hit a hole in one in the par three tournament?
Absolutely. I just had lunch in the clubhouse, and Jack came up, and I was able to shake his hand. So it's always a thrill. Anytime you can watch Jack Nicklaus do anything and to have an ace in the par three competition, that's very special.
Well, it probably it also discounts his chance of winning because no one's ever won the par three and won the tournament, so Jack's out. Now, now you must have obviously you've done interviews with him. Who are some of the great golfers that you've had as you've interviewed for, that could be available on Hulu? Are any of the golfers on Hulu?
You know, we're going to put some of the golfers up, but I mean, I can remember interviewing Sam Snead years ago. You know, can you believe it? Sam Snead with that twinkle in his eye, and he, you know, just had so much charisma and had so many great stories. And Gary Player, Jack, you know, there are a couple of the golfers. You know, the show really mostly was with baseball personalities and basketball. Ball hockey. I did have and Patty Berg, there's a name for you with the women's, the LPGA. So there were a couple golf legends that were part of that sports interview series. You know, I did that series between 1989. My first interview was with Mickey Mantle, and it aired through 2006. I think Brett Favre was one of my last interviews with that particular series. So we covered a lot of territory.
Well, and what's amazing and impressive to me is that you were able to get these interviews as still a preteen. Because clearly you were a kid when you did these, when you started doing
this. Yes, I was only 12. Exactly. I was so underage. No, you know, it just, I look back now and I don't, you know, all these people, most of them, were way beyond their playing days, way beyond the prime of their careers. And so they offered such interesting perspective about their success stories. And, you know, nowadays, I don't think you could really get some of these sports legends to give, first of all, to give the interview, and secondly, to get the kind of time that I had with some of these legends back then. And, you know, I never really ever paid, I've never paid anybody to sit down and do an interview. And, you know, now everybody wants ownership. And I don't think an interview series like I did back then could even be possible today.
And that's what makes it neat, because you are talking about some of the legends that you spoke to. Now, in Augusta National, starts tomorrow, the Masters. Will you, tomorrow, will you go around the course with anyone, or will you be jumping around from people, or who do you, are you most interested in following, and what's the best story in your mind for the first round?
Well, the way I cover this tournament, because I'm doing reports for CBS Sports Radio Network starting at 7:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and I'm on every hour for them at the bottom of the hour.
You're not leaving
and
the
then,
press room then?
What, no, I'm here in my radio booth in the media room, and I'm also on WFAN every top of the hour starting at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So, you know, we have monitors.